Your home is your biggest investment. So don't waste money experimenting when it comes to building, maintaining, or repairing it. From the chimney and the flooring to your siding and even the white picket fence, we've got you covered. This is Home Science Show, where we dispel the myths and misconceptions about your home, reading the fine print so you don't have to. Here's your hosts, Chris Linder and Dimitri Lipinski.
Welcome to today's episode of the Home Science Show with Dimitri and Chris. And today we've got special guest in here, Anthony Goen. Anthony's flewing in from California today to be with us for the show. He's a pretty interesting guy, got a background in finance, and operates a pretty sweet company that helps homeowners finance, home improvement projects, and can't wait to hear a little bit about that. But today we're going to talk a lot about catastrophe type stuff with all the hurricanes in the news and what's going on with these homes and why they're not standing up, and what we can do as homeowners to think about that in our projects.
So last week, guys, what you've seen in the news, probably devastation, people are dead. I mean, it's a sad story in all the news that you can turn on these days. And we're going to talk about hurricane house. How can we build stronger wind-resistant homes? Here's what I've seen in the news, to be honest with you. I've seen three little pigs' tale over and over again. If you remember, it's a fable about three pigs who built three houses of different materials. A big bat wolf blows down the first two pigs' houses made out of straw and sticks, respectively, but it's unable to destroy the third pig's house made out of bricks. And what I've seen is in Florida right now, there is a tons of homes built out of sticks and straws, and there's some that built out of bricks and mortar, seems like, and they're just standing there. And if I would be living there and my house would be destroyed, all I wanted to do is go find builders of those homes, ask them how they build it, and hire them to build my own house. So guys, Tony, first question for you is, you're from California. Obviously you don't see, do you have strong winds there? I know you have earthquakes, but what about strong winds?
We don't have strong winds. That's not a big problem for us. But recently, especially in the last couple of years, we've been hit with some really big firestorms. So like Napa was burnt down, and then we've had some historic fires in SoCal. Yep. And also in Northern California.
Yeah, that's huge. That's also huge. Different devastation, different problem. But I know it's not only Florida. It's not only coast. Even here in Minnesota, we have tornadoes coming in. Even this year, we have a couple hours away from here, you know, whole cities pretty much wiped out or have extreme, you know, big damages. Chris, you have a cabin that barely passed, right?
Well, yeah, so last year's tornado came through, and we have a place up in northern Wisconsin, and exactly, it came through, and it was a pretty big one in the news. People saw it. It flattened out complete campgrounds, trailer park, and big turkey farm. I mean, just to the ground. I mean, literally leveled these places. It missed our place literally by less than a quarter of a mile. So we didn't know anything. I was actually out of the country when it happened. Heard about it, but for 24 to 48 hours, really nobody was communicating. It hit the town pretty hard, and we didn't know if we lost it or not. We didn't know if our place was gone. We have, you know, our boat, our lift.
That's scary.
Yeah, it is. You know, you don't know. And not only that, all the people who live up there year-round and are there.
Absolutely.
It was early enough, too, where there wasn't a lot of people out yet. It was in early May. So that did help. But, yeah, it's devastating.
As I was leaving home today and I told my wife what our show is about, my wife was asking me questions. What would happen if we lose power? And honestly, I didn't have answer. I mean, in my business, I do have generators and stuff like that. And we're going to talk a lot today about, self-awareness, like to know what to do when it does happen. But here's the deal. Here's my first question to both of you, actually, guys. I'm going to ask this question as an immigrant, because that's first shock that almost any immigrant in construction zone, any construction worker who comes to United States, the first shock he has is how poorly houses are built. Like that's the fact. I don't care if you come from Europe, Romania, Brazil, homes here are shittier homes than those are overseas. And I'm sorry to say it, but like when my dad came here, you literally, if you're a strong guy, you can punch almost any wall and punch through it. Like if you're car ever gets accident with your garage, I mean, you're talking about not damage to the car. You're talking about moving away walls or your car going right through. So why, in your opinion, we build such a shitty homes here?
Well, I mean, I think it's a couple of things. One, I mean, it almost, I think for most of us, it might surprise us to hear that. I don't know about you, Anthony. Like, I hear that, I'm like, really? You come here from Russia, Romania, wherever, and, mm-hmm. and you think that our homes are not built well? That actually surprised me. Now, that's coming from somebody who's never been there and sure. don't know. I've been a lot of places around the world, but for me, I think that a lot of what that amounts to is, you know, it's not that we don't have those same materials, because we've got all the materials we need to
exactly.
build. We can build homes out of concrete blocks, and we can core fill them. I mean, it's probably the best thing you could possibly do is build a home out of concrete block and core fill it. I mean, that thing's going to stand up to just about anything, but how's it going to look, right? And how's it going to function and all those sorts of things? So I think, you know, in the U.S., we get very caught up a lot of times in efficiencies and things of those natures, and then, you know, of course, design and stuff like that.
I would like to correct myself, and I'll let Anthony to comment in as well. I would like to correct myself. It's economy of scale for us. So you see here houses goes up, you know, like in 4 or 5 weeks, super fast. But I'm talking about initial quality, and it's actually very different between commercial and residential. Commercial in the United States is amazing. It's brick and mortar. It will last. I mean, your downtowns, it's completely different to build a bank and to build a house. Completely different. And people who build residential homes, the standards are so low. Like I spoke to a lot of tile installers who work in England, in Europe, in Russia. I mean, yes, maybe rates are lower. You're getting paid less money, but you're going to be doing, you know, one bathroom remodel for a month, and it's going to be very, very, like, solid, I would say. I would use the word. In here, it's builder's grade. It's fast, fast, fast. Make sure it looks nice. Pass the code. Go to the next. Anthony, what are you going to say?
Yeah, I think, look, there's a lot of things here. I'm not sure that I would agree generally that, you know, the homes here are shittier than the homes in other places. I mean, I think there's a little bit of everything everywhere. But I think what's unique about the United States is that we have a really well-developed financial system around our real estate. So most of the homes that we're talking about here, you know, suburban residential homes, they've been built by large companies, big asset managers that are buying them, you know, buying them by the hundreds or 200s. And they're obsessive about return on investment and how much money they're making per home, how much they can rent it out as a percent of how much it costs to build. And that's just not an ecosystem that is developed as rigorously and at such a scale in other countries. And
yeah.
So that's probably number one. I would say number two, and that actually probably fits in with your point about commercial and residential, because in commercial, a lot of the builders operate what they built, right? So they don't sell it off. It's like they own it and then they rent it out for 10, 20, 30 years.
Yeah. Again, you're listening to the Home Science Show with Dimitri and Chris. We got Anthony going in here, and we're talking today on your quality of homes and being able to withstand hurricanes and natural disaster type stuff. I agree with what you're saying in large scale, because I think our country, one, it's young by comparison to most places in the
Absolutely.
World, right? Super dynamic economy, and things are moving fast. So we would think, if we're from here, you would think, oh, we're totally developed. Like we're busting at the seams. We're not even close to that. Whereas a lot of countries, you know, they've been around a really, really long time. They don't have the dynamics of it. They're not building at the same rate. And so it doesn't lend itself to some of the, you know, types of building that we're doing today.
And a lot of trades, a lot of trends from United States do go to China, to Russia. Like in Russia right now, we don't build brick and mortar anymore as well. It's all like the techniques are traveling, because people look at the United States and it's all affordable housing. So when we come back, I want to keep talking about how can we build better homes for the masses. Obviously, we have nice homes in the United States. We have them in Brazil. We have them in Russia. We have them in China. But we're talking about that middle class. Can middle class people afford brick and mortar homes? What needs to happen to our economy for majority of people to have windproof homes?
Yeah,
when we come back.
You're listening to Home Science Show with Dimitri and Chris, and you can find us on YouTube at The Home Science Show, or check out our website, homescienceshow.com. If you've got information about a project or something that you're looking to get us to talk about and discuss, email us, info@homescienceshow.com. We'll be back in a sec. Welcome back to the Home Science Show with Dimitri and Chris. And today we're talking about catastrophic effect our homes and what we can do, you know, maybe to prepare our homes better, what we should expect, some of those things. So my question to you, Dimitri, is what would it take to build stronger homes in the U.S.? You know, is it just cost? Is it even possible?
I think it's possible. I just think it's it has to do something with the public awareness. It's what house do you want? I mean, obviously, homes are not bought with cash. So everybody wants to buy a home, you know, nicer home for the dollar. So what's happening is, let's say you can afford a $200,000 loan to build a house. What would you do as a homeowner or potential homeowner? Would you buy four-bedroom house for $200,000 out of wood, or two-bedroom for $200,000 out of brick and mortar? So people usually choose bigger, nicer, but maybe lower quality. Something has to give. And builders create the demand. So the biggest builders in the country, and I've seen it a lot in the United States, the worst houses I've ever been to are built by the biggest builders in the country. I remember a remodeling basement, and the whole floor in the kitchen were sagging. And what happened is they just forgot to put a wall in. Like, entire support wall in the basement was missing. And after 6 months, floor cave in, builder came in, and they built it. But the thing is, he passed all the building codes, everything. Everything was done. People were living in the house. An entire wall was missing. And we see a lot of those little things on this. I call them commercial builders when they build, you know, 10, 20, 30 homes per month. And what they do is, like, it's very appealing to the public. Like, let's say they go in and they say it's $350,000 and it's a 4,000 square feet home, where you custom builder cannot build a home for that price. Custom builder with the nicer finishes, with the nicer quality, will build the same house for $500,000. A lot of times people cannot afford it, and they sacrifice the square footage and luxurious of the space towards the quality.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, there's a lot of different ways to chop that conversation up, because I think, like Anthony was saying too, is that there's so many different things that drive the way things are built in this country, the way the homes we live in are built. Because you talk about your commercial, you know, big time builders, and, you know, disclosure, I used to work for one of them. I was a senior builder for one of the largest home builders in the world a long time ago. And, you know, we were building 40,000 homes a year. Now, this was across the country.
Sure.
That's a lot of homes, right? But if you look at what percentage the big-time builders build versus custom builders, it's not even close. I mean, you're talking such a small, small percentage. And a couple of things with that. One, the custom guys, even if everybody did want it, could never keep up to that. It's not realistic to the rate of
growth. I have a question to Anthony. So you're from California. How many people live in California because they don't like housing market and how expensive homes are?
Are leaving? Absolutely. Yeah. It's a huge problem. I mean, I think San Francisco especially is pretty bad. You know, they have a record number of people who are leaving San Francisco. And one thing over the last couple of months I've noticed is that a lot of businesses are leaving San Francisco. A lot of the people out there building companies, technology companies, they're going to Austin, they're going to Utah, they're going all over the country because it's getting totally out of control. But it's kind of a reverse issue, because the problem is that we've got way too restrictive building codes. Mm-hmm. And obviously all the people who own the land already, they don't want us to build new stuff there because it's going to depress the price of their assets. And so we've got all sorts of conflict around that. But yeah, lots of people leaving.
Well, it's supply and demand. So when people want something cheaper, builders will provide a cheaper value, unfortunately, because people need to understand, people see the front, people see the picture, like picture perfect house in the neighborhood. What people don't know, if hurricane happens, if tornado happens, the whole neighborhood will be wiped out. So when I look at the picture, there's actually been a New York Times article about Hurricane Michael. And so what they did is they interviewed the builder who built a home that actually stood. If you look at the footage, there's like 2-3 homes standing where everybody else is gone, like to the ground, war zone. But why those 3 homes are still standing? So New York Times reached out and they did interviews. So one of the homes was built just 2 years ago. It was a rebuilt home because it was destroyed in prior years. They didn't know it's going to be tested this fast. So it's an amazing story. Roof is intact. House is intact. You know, everything is intact. When I look at it, that house doesn't cost quadruple. It may be double the cost. What, like, if it's 200,000 versus 400,000. But think about this. Is it cheaper to build it up front, like double the cost, or rebuild it later after it's all get wiped out? Of course it's cheaper to build it nicer and stronger up front, because you don't just lose the building, you lose the furniture, you lose the, you know, everything else, mm-hmm. the whole living. I mean,
yeah, I think unfortunately people are just, you know, stuck with the situation they're stuck with. In other words, you know, they're just going to do what works for them. You know, as much as I agree, you know, is trying to get that home that's going to be the higher quality and it's going to have all the sustainability that we would all want at some point. If that's 400 and I got a 250 budget, I know what I'm buying. I mean, it's just not no way around it, right?
Well, one of the reasons is also people trust government authorities. So when I buy a house in Maple Grove, I believe that, hey, this is a brand new house. City passed every single inspection, like for my electricity, for my water, for my everything, right? And unfortunately, I have to say, as a builder, as a contractor, I have to admit it, the standards are low. Like, for example, I've seen so many violations about, like, siding installation, for example. So manufacturer will come in and say, this is how we want you to install our siding. And then big builder comes in, does very poor job installing it, doesn't follow manufacturer instructions. But what's going to happen later? City inspector going to close the permit. Wall might be missing. Siding is not up to specs. Roofing is not up to spec. Everything is bare minimum code. But people have that false peace of mind. They're, hey, my government approved everything to 2018 codes. This house is safe to live. And next time something happened, everything going to be on the ground. Because it's not going to, I mean, think about 130 mile per hour wind warranty. I mean, your shingles has that warranty. But you know better than I do. Give it 50 miles an hour, the roof is gone.
Yeah, and most homes are not even going to make
because
that.
Because city doesn't enforce the code. In a lot of areas of the country, there's no codes whatsoever. I mean, in Texas, you don't need license to do almost anything. I mean, there's like roofing contractors. Like, they just operate. It's Wild West.
Yeah, but let's talk about Texas, because I think their whole thing is reducing regulation on what people are able to do with make their own decisions. And that's kind of their stance. I mean, and so there's that side of it too. Everywhere is okay. We want to be able to believe that if the city tells us that everything was built to spec, that it's going to be great and this and that. But we also, on the other hand, we've got a huge majority of the population that says, stop regulating the things we're going to do. If we want to build crappy homes, let us build crappy homes. If we want to do this, let us do this. And so there's a struggle on each side of that.
What do you think, Anthony?
It's interesting. You know, occupational licensing and regulation is something I've been pretty obsessed with. I do think there's trade-offs. What you generally see, and I think one part of this conversation that I'd like to throw into the mix is, like, you know, what constituted a safe home before, you know, to even 10, 20 years ago can no longer be safe because clearly we're experiencing some kind of, you know, new paradigm in climate and especially in extreme weather. So, like, you know, we're talking about the hurricane that just hit, but that hurricane was a historic hurricane for that region. I mean, we haven't seen something like that maybe ever. I think if it was 1 or 2 miles faster, it would have actually been, you know, the biggest hurricane to hit that region, period, across the board.
But here's the deal. Here's my argument to that. You live on the coast. You know the hurricanes, strong winds will happen. I mean, people say it all the time. Like, a lot of people questioning, why do you even live so close mm-hmm. to the ocean? It's like asking for trouble. I mean, and I that opinion I see on the first page of all the news, but I don't see enough people talking about quality of construction. I mean, we should not be questioning why
totally
we're getting
agree.
130-mile winds. We should be questioning why we're not prepared for it. Again, my three little pigs.
But they just didn't know that was a thing that happened, right? Like, when they built a lot of these homes 20, 30 years ago, that just wasn't a dimension. But I think that what you're bringing, which is why aren't we building homes even going forward that are resistant, is a whole separate question. But I think actually to wrap all these conversations, including your kind of point about people making decisions that maybe aren't the best ones for them, like in California and San Francisco, there's a whole part of the city that's called a liquefaction zone. And we know that if an earthquake hits, that entire part of the city is going to go underwater. And that literally everybody there is going to die and all of their real estate is going to be destroyed. And you have people paying $4 or $5 million for apartments that are in the liquefaction zone, like 100% chance you're going under the ocean.
Two-bedroom, 1,200 square foot apartments.
Exactly. Yeah, well, that's why people are leaving.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yep. Supply, demand.
But, you know, I think that are we not overlooking the fact that, like you said, you know, you look at Hurricane Michael comes, it wipes out, and you can see all the pictures all over the news. It wipes out the coast, right? And you see these couple of homes that are standing, and like you just said, they're built a couple years ago. So let me ask you this. Do you think it's that those people who built those homes that withstood, that they like went so far above and beyond, or did they just go to the standard that is now in place today because that's what they had to do? And that worked, you know, because the other ones that are there, some of those homes are 50, 60 years old. I mean, we know that those homes just were nowhere near. Now we know more. We have more knowledge now. So do you not think that maybe, because I struggle to think that they went that far above and beyond to build this, you know, tank of a home to withstand it.
I will answer when we come back. Again, you're listening to Dmitry and Chris with the Home Science Show. When we come back, we're going to be talking about why so much U.S. infrastructure and housing is lousy. And we'll talk about building with shoddy materials, why labor shortage affects quality of homes today. Welcome back to Home Science Show. My name is Dmitry, Chris, and Anthony here in the studio with me today. And we continue talking about why so much U.S. infrastructure and housing is lousy and built with a shoddy material. So as you know, or probably know, there's a huge, huge shortage of construction workers in the United States. And what I personally see is happening is quality of construction is going down. Because everybody's behind. What happens where a builder is behind? He has a hard line. He has to finish on time, and something has to give. A lot of times, it's that last push, and unfortunately, when you don't have skilled labor, you start hiring, like maybe new workers who is not as skilled as they used to be. So there's no like unions or schools and people literally going into trades who've never installed hardwood floors before and never painted before. So now a lot of people, you know, start getting into trades business, but they're not there yet. And something it gives, and because of government, it doesn't regulate it, you know, as tough as some other industries. There is a lot of room for quality improvement because nobody's really checking it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you, at this point, I don't know how you're going to get around that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, all growing up, I don't know what, you know, you, Anthony, all it was you got to go to college, not, you know, graduate from high school and go find yourself a good construction job or learn a trade because you'll have that skill for the rest of your life. I mean, that conversation might have been out there, but it certainly wasn't the push. And now we're feeling the effects of that as we get out here and our generation is now out here as consumers.
Well, according to New York Times on this topic, workmanship has declined in parallel. There continue to be expert craftsmen, carpenters, roofers, painters who work with precision and pride, but they are increasingly being pushed out by cheaper labor with inferior skills, which is, of course, why labor is cheaper. So builders, and especially the biggest builders in the country, they always go to the cheapest, you know, options possible because, you know, people maybe cannot afford housing because we all see construction is not trade or is not industry by itself. Now we have, do you know the numbers, Anthony? How many people are financing their homes versus like own them? I think it's like over 80%. So now the whole industry depends on like pretty much on the banking system, if you will, because it's all loans. It's all owned by, you know, either real estate or like, you know, somebody owns the homes and everything is keep appreciating in value. Everything is going up. But I mean, cost of land, like California is a great example. Cost of land is going up. Cost of materials going up. You know, everything is increasing, labor is going up, but people cannot afford to pay more per se, like average people, right?
Well, there's actually a really interesting point that you were making about college, and I think it actually wraps back to the point about costs going up. And one thing that I've observed, because you know, insurance is an area that I'm very interested in, is that most of the, especially the craftsmen, they don't have full-time employment with benefits, et cetera, for the people that they bring on who help build, because of workers' compensation insurance. And because of the way that that regulation works and the fact that effectively you're required to pay it, so most people get a 1099, and so the people who do pay it end up paying huge premiums. And so as a consequence, you know, nobody wants to hire people full time with benefits, et cetera, to come work on their crew or for their roofing company. And then what does that do at the end of the day? It means that it's not a good necessarily career path for people. And that's why we're not telling them to go join a roofing company instead of going to college after high school.
Well, it's volatile, too, right?
Absolutely.
The industry is volatile. I mean, you made a good point that with the insurance. Dimitri, what does your roofing company pay, if you don't mind, annually for just work comp? I mean, is that something you're okay with sharing? I mean, or give us an idea of the industry average.
We just have been audited. I can tell you, I don't know on top of my head entire bill, but I know recently we've been audited and we were short $39,000 based on two people, on classification of two people who were employees. They weren't roofers, but insurance just say they're roofers. Now, I mean, it's 55 cents on the dollar.
Yeah.
That's the rate. So if I pay you $1,000 per week, I have to pay $550 to insurance to insure you. I mean, that's why entire roofing industry cannot even sustain it, and everybody use subcontractors. But here's what I really, really like what New York Times said about this issue. This is not the fault, and I quote, "This is not the fault of homeowners, but of the industries whose practices favor the use of inferior products and labor that drives modern construction. The developers, lenders, builders, and realtors who, to make quick money, have created a stock of domestic and commercial infrastructure that is a waste of resources and will not last." And the way I look at it, I was actually reading this week Forbes article about billionaires. So there's a huge increase of billionaires in 2018 and 17. So the famous talk of rich getting richer, right? So people with money usually increase their wealth, I think, by 16-17%, right? It's your financial people. It's people who moves money, like Warren Buffett and stuff like that. But your middleman, like your masses, the growth there like 2-3%. So when you look at the housing market, houses do increase like a lot, but labor and how much people make, it doesn't increase accordingly. So that's why people have to move out of California, because they cannot afford. I mean, housing maybe double in 10 years, but people didn't double their income in 10 years. So what they have to do? They have to move out to support their living elsewhere.
Yeah, you're listening to the Home Science Show with Dimitri and Chris, and you can contact us on our website via info@homescienceshow.com. If you have questions or topics that you want to get to us, or if you've even got shoddy workmanship from a contractor, something like that, you want to talk to us, reach out and find us on YouTube at the Home Science Show. We're talking about just kind of shoddy quality of homes and how they hold up to things and why it's like this in our country. And Dimitri, to your point, so I lived in the Vail Valley in Colorado, I actually lived kind of on the belt between Vail and Aspen. And you're talking one of the wealthiest areas of the country. The average home in Vail or in Aspen is a second or third home for most people, and a property that they visit maybe 10 days a year. That's pretty much the standard. But what that does is all these very big homes are there. So we're building, you know, $15, $20 million homes. I mean, full equestrian barns and helipads and all that stuff. But you have all the workers who are there. So us, you know, we had a tile and stone fabrication factory, and we service these homes. You know, big homes, big jobs. But we all had to live there, right? So you've got, you know, these $20 million properties being built by people who are then going home to their, you know, average person home, you know, that would be in most parts of the country $300-400 and is now $600-800, $1.2 million homes just because of where they're located in the ground they're on. But those are the people servicing that, and there's a dynamic there that's hard to understand until you've been in it, from a standpoint of you go and you work with the best designers and engineers around the world, because they all come there, and you build these things, these properties, all of a sudden you kind of like have some expectations as well that you may not have had if you weren't in that wealthy of a place. You know what I mean by that? So mm-hmm. now all of a sudden your prices are rising, increasing, and your demands and all these things, and it creates this big situation.
I have a question for both of you, but more to Anthony. Do you think that house marketing and increasing prices will contribute to spread of wealth? Like, I see it's happening in Europe, and you mentioned it earlier, where pretty much people with money, your investors, own majority of housing, like whether it's apartments, developments, and people with a low income have to rent from them. So that's that way, you know, rich is getting richer and poor is getting poorer because they cannot afford it. And I see, like, I already see the gap is increasing. But do you see in the future, if nothing changes, that gap is going to be bigger and bigger and bigger? Because apartments are on the rise, and that's a fact.
It's a big question. Big question. I think that, you know, we are actually seeing in this country for the first time, especially over the last couple of years, wages increase for the bottom decile, so the bottom 10% of earners. And that's just something that hasn't happened since the late 70s, actually, which is pretty wild. So, you know, there's some of that coming back. Traditionally, home ownership, at least, you know, we studied the American dream pretty closely, and we tried to, you know, as we were building out our business. And one of the things we realizes, you know, the home is the key financial asset for the majority of families, right, for the majority of households. And it can be a wealth generation tool for them. But the problem is that, you know, there is zero education around, you know, how to think about it as a financial asset and how to leverage it and how to deal with leverage against it. And all of these things that, you know, if you're talking to the people in New York that own a third of, you know, these major cities, they know this stuff cold. And everything is totally optimized. But if you're a homeowner, you're like, oh, well, you know, somebody was the first person to put a mortgage in front of me and I signed the document and, you know, that's the house that I have. And, you know, if I'm not capturing the upside that comes from the fact that now all these rich people are moving in and my house is increasing in value, you know, it doesn't really – it's not how I'm thinking about it. And so part of what we're – you know, we'd like to do, and I'm talking about a 5-10 year period, or just I think is important in general, is help people think about it as a financial asset, because I think that then they'll be able to leverage it to build more wealth in addition to hopefully continuously increasing wages.
Yeah, you get a lot of people that I think they're leveraging their home, but in the wrong ways, versus, you know, your savvy investor, maybe a little bit more experienced, or they've seen enough of it around, or like your East Coasters, I think, you know, are really good with that. So in other words, you can get a home equity line, but you know, or you can get a, you know, leverage something against it, and they're buying, you know, not assets, they're buying toys, or they're doing improvements that aren't going to actually improve their value of their home or whatever it is, and they're not using that the right way.
Great point, Anthony. I couldn't agree more with you. And I also wanted to add that that's one of the reasons we do Home Science Show, because people don't understand this thing. And 2009 crisis showed how vulnerable that American dream is. How many people, thousands, millions of people lost their homes? Because when you're in that bubble, when you have more houses you can afford, the whole dream can collapse right in front of your eyes, and you're going to go renting smaller apartment. Guys, when we come back, we will be talking about hurricane and tornadoes, and we're going to give you some very, very helpful tips on surviving severe weather. Stay tuned. I can sleep inside a Bronx 100 years. Lizards in the pressure zone.
You're listening to Home Science Show with Dimitri and Chris, and today we've got Anthony going in here from Hearth, and Hearth is it's a finance company. Anthony's based out of California, out in San Francisco. He's come in here today to chat with us a little bit, so we're going to have him join us in on our tip segment here at the end. This segment here where we're going to try to give as much information as we can, as many tips as we can with things that people maybe, you know, haven't thought about. There's a lot of tips out there. We've all kind of heard something, but, you know, we're going to try to, you know, explain on some of that some more here.
My question to both of you guys today is, let's be honest with ourselves. If you are in the area, let's say in Florida, and you hear the warning, would you evacuate yourself if you hear that there's a storm is coming and you feel like you have a strong house? Because I can tell you for myself, I mean, there's the warning have to be very, very big for me to move. Like, let's say you may be vacationing or whatever. Like, would you take a chance or would you actually leave? Just be honest. If you feel like you would be safe because you have such a solid, solid home, would you take a chance if you have enough food, enough storage, everything, stay or leave? Let's say you're living there. And because for me, this is just adrenaline. This is just cool thing to experience.
100% I would leave. I mean, I think that...
and zero, I mean, he's like, nope, I'm gone.
You can. I mean, obviously, if it's like, if it's not a big storm, it's not a big deal. But I mean, if we're talking about the kind of thing that we've been seeing, there's just no doubt. Because, look, the reason people stay is because they aren't in the place financially where they can actually get out. And they don't have a car. They don't have somewhere else to stay. They can't afford a hotel. I mean, that's why my understanding is that's why people stay. But staying for the adrenaline, I just don't think you'd find me in that bucket.
Well, here's the how many flies did you have last 30 days?
I think like maybe 20.
Exactly. So for you is like travel somewhere is just like it's just normal thing. For me is, I mean, I would travel. Like, here's the deal. For me, if it's an excuse to escape, like, I hate Minnesota right now because it's so cold. So if it's right now.
Well, it's beautiful out there. We got snow last week.
Okay,
so
if there's any warning on the radio and anybody even suggests to evacuate, I would be in Florida tomorrow.
Snow's coming, Dimitri's gone. He's booked his flight.
But if I'm in the Florida enjoying the weather and there is some wings coming one my way and somebody say, "Hey, for your safety, can you please move?" I'm like, "No, I'll just stay and I'll just, you know, go with the ride."
Well, I think, you know, so I've got a kind of a firsthand situation on this. We've got an employee who lives down in the Carolinas, and okay. So he works remotely, but we share a video conference all day long. So we're staring at each other on screen all day long. We work closely together. In the last couple months between Florence and then Michael, he has had so many situations where it's like, I don't know if I'm evacuating. I don't know if I should go. I don't know how bad it's going to be here. They can't literally, you know, when you're on the ground, what you got to understand is when you're on the ground, I mean, you
feel safe.
Well, hundreds of miles away from it too,
exactly.
Right? It just feels like it's totally different. We're looking at a map on a TV going, you better get out of there, man. It's coming. You know, it's totally different than when you're right in it. So they have to make these decisions. But I think a large percentage of people, if not mistaken, when they're asked, why didn't you evacuate? It's financial cost. Because if it doesn't actually come and affect them, what's it cost just to leave town for a week? Thousands?
Exactly.
A lot of people don't have thousands just to go do that for no reason. They don't have a thousand dollar emergency fund.
I 100% agree. Well, all jokes aside, let's talk about it. You know, like, first tip obviously would be evacuate. If you hear the warning, just go. Even if you feel safe, if your government is telling you, just go. Because I see it all the time. Like, I understand whether it's like category 3 or 2 or winds, but when there's category 4 or 5 coming and people are not leaving, I mean, even me, as not as I am, I'm start questioning, like, what's wrong with those people? Just go. Pack up and go.
Yeah, but you look at Florence. It was supposed to hit the shore at a Cat 5. They think dwindled out and hit it. What, a 1? I mean, sure. So think of all the people that, you know, would have evacuated and didn't. You know, sure. And then where do you go? If everybody's making a mass exodus, it's not the easiest thing to do. You're trying, I'm going to book a hotel. Well, how far away do I got to get before there's a hotel available and all that stuff? There's a lot to do with it. I mean, I've got 4 kids. So now I'm packing up 4 kids, all their stuff.
Staying in traffic for hours.
I'm going to go sit in traffic in a minivan with...
Yeah, but what's your other worst case scenario, you know, with 4 kids?
Well, that's the thing, right? Because that's what's on your mind is, well, I've got 4 kids. Well, I need to be safe here. I feel like I need to be smart. I can't be thinking about, you know, the adrenaline piece of it. You're a guy with 5 kids.
People like you and me, we're going to leave last minute.
My 2-year-old would be on the roof riding it out with a flag. I mean, I know that, but it's...
Well, let's go down to tips. So, obviously, because it doesn't happen every day, you know, we're not prepared for it. Do you have a generator in your house? Do you have stock of food for 2 weeks in your house?
Yeah.
I don't know if I do.
Yeah, I think that's the first tip that I would have is be prepared before you need to be prepared. And,
exactly.
You know, we always talk about that, but I see with our restoration company, so we do water, more importantly to this one, is fire. And not the water doesn't come into play, you know, floods and stuff with preparedness, because it certainly does, but a fire is so devastating. So we talk about all the things you need to do to be prepared for this. It's, do you have a whole home generator? So in other words, is there a backup generator that can run your entire home? Is that realistic for you and your family? There's lots of companies out there like Anthony's that would even finance that potentially, or whoever, to do that home improvement. And is it that big of a deal? Because what it brings, I mean, even when the power goes out for us with all the kids, I mean, it's kind of a big deal if it's only a few hours. If I'm traveling, my wife calls, power's out. Like, what do? We live in the country now, and so it's a big deal. But all the food rations, where your designated safe room and escape plan, and practice it. Practice your escape plan, because if you live in a two-story home and there's a fire in the kitchen and you can't get down the stairs, do you know what you're going to do to get out of that home? Do you have one of the ladders that, you know, sits by the windows in your upstairs bedroom that you throw out the window, it hooks over the windowsill? And have you ever had to practice going out it and sending your kids down it in that scenario? Think about practicing that, or teaching all the kids what the escape route is, just like in a school. You know, they practice a fire. These things are real, and it saves lives.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, I think to your point is you should make sure that you have a checklist for, you know, what to make sure you've done before you leave the house. So one thing that I know a lot of people forget is to turn off their propane tanks. And, you know, that's something where if there is some kind of spark, you're in a lot of trouble and you don't want to, you know, leave your home in that state.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm paranoid about propane and gas, like smelling, like dealing with it. I never wanted to have a house with propane. I mean, it's efficient, but I absolutely hate it. Every time something goes off, I'm like, that's it, we're going to die. Like, if I ever going to die, it's probably going to be big because of my electric fireplace and gas fireplace was turned off, and I don't know. It's just always something going to blow up if I'm
lights
using it.
Lights go out at Dimitri's house. That's it. We're done. We're done. We're going to blow up. No, it's but most people don't know into that is every home pretty much has a shutoff valve to their natural gas, or if you're on propane, a shutoff valve that if something big is happening, it's just a simple valve. Turn it, because when something breaks and falls and causes a spark, I mean, a lot of times people come back, their house would have withstood like all their neighbors, but it didn't because of that.
My tip is stock up some cash, because when catastrophe happens, gas stations and everybody around you going to be probably out of power, so you're not going to have ATM. Having a couple $100, you'll be amazed how much stuff you can buy with the cash, even in catastrophe situation. You can bargain, you can do whatever, but if you don't have anything on you and nobody has a power around you, what are you going to do? Credit card, like, take my numbers? Like, it just doesn't work like that. Mm-hmm. So have a couple grand, maybe.
You make a good point, though, because if you can't, a lot of people now don't even, they don't carry cash, period.
Exactly.
You know, or gasoline. You know, having some gasoline on hand on some safe level, you know, isn't a bad idea either, because if the pumps are closed, you know, you're going to be in trouble.
Yep. A lot of people do live in the mobile homes, and they think it's somewhat safer because if it's smaller. It's actually opposite. Mobile homes are probably the least safest, you know, like residents out there. If you live in a mobile home, make sure you go somewhere bigger or do travel, because that's what usually get picked up first by winds. I mean, if you've seen Hurricane Michael footage, there's some pictures I've seen on a train flipped over. I mean, train, like, got off the tracks and literally flipped. I mean, 150 miles an hour winds will flip, like, not only semi-trucks and stuff, but, like, mobile homes, it's not heavy, it will flip.
Yeah, and to that point, a lot of the mobile homes and campgrounds for that, there's a lot of people where we live in the north, so a lot of people come here, the snowbirds, they stay here in the summer and they go back to Arizona and Florida in the winter, so they stay in these campgrounds as residents. There's a lot of, there's shelters. Find out where those shelters are and just go to them. Who cares, you know? I mean, just go to them and hang out and play cards with everybody. I mean, it's you know, better to be safe than sorry. I think, you know, it's one of those things where just be thinking about it before it's time, before it's too late, and that's all that really matters.
Maybe practice, and even if you do decide to stay inside, you know, practice where are you going to go. If it's a basement, what's the safest area in your house to survive? We hope you guys enjoy our show. You're listening to Dimitri and Chris Home Science Show. Find us on YouTube, Home Science Show, homescienceshow.com on the internet. Comment on our videos what you want us to talk about next time. Stay tuned.